Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
We are post NFL Combine, and we are knee deep in NFL draft season, and really NFL draft intrigue, NFL draft rumor mill, NFL draft drama, everything that comes with the weeks leading up to the NFL draft. I'm Mike Osti, and this is another edition of Mic Drop, made possible by the Believe Network and available everywhere you get your podcasts: Apple, Google Play, TuneIn, etc. And I am going to be talking about the NFL draft on this show. Again, it is NFL draft season. I just covered the NFL Combine. I'm back from Indianapolis, and I enjoyed some steak, some deep dish pizza, talking to some NFL draft picks, a record being set at the Combine, and Xavier Worthy and how fast that man is. And I'm going to have this conversation with Devin Jackson of the Philadelphia Inquirer, who actually I met at the Combine, and I had a nice recommendation from a colleague of mine, from Nick Farabaugh, who's been on this show and I work with throughout the Sports Now family of networks and in the Pittsburgh media market, to have Devin on and talk some NFL draft. So I'm going to listen to Nick. It's a good recommendation to have from Nick Farabaugh. So Devin, I appreciate you taking the time. As I told you off the air, I really enjoy the blue headphones there for anybody watching this on video. And if you're not, and you're just listening to the audio, you are missing out because they pop on the screen. But how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me on and talking some NFL draft. I've got to thank Nick as well. He's a great friend of mine, and he's all over the place. He gives great recommendations. He wants everyone he knows to meet everyone he knows. So it's always cool to be able to network and kind of in a different way when a guy wants you to meet everyone that he knows. So but great coming on, and looking forward to talking NFL draft for sure.
Yeah, Nick is a great guy for sure, and it was even funny because outside of meeting you, and we've connected through social media, but that was the first time we've been in person, but Nick, even with another colleague that I had met before that I work with, that Nick's been around me when I met him before, Nick's first words when he saw me at that bar that night were, "Had you met Joe? Like, Joe's over there. You should talk and meet Joe." And it's like, I know Joe. I know him. we've worked together. Joe texts me for advice every day. I'm well aware of Joe, but thank you. So yeah, Nick wants everybody to make sure they do know everyone. And that's why Nick's a good guy. But going into the NFL draft now, Nick is not an NFL draft prospect. Maybe in his dreams years ago, he did play high school ball, I believe, was a lineman. But the players that can play were in Indianapolis. They were at the Combine, or at least most of the notable ones. As I mentioned, a lot went on that weekend, a lot conversations go on between NFL teams, and that key word is thrown out there, formal meeting, because a lot went on that they aren't going to tell us as well that weekend in Indianapolis. It happens every year, but we are going to start the place that everyone's talking about, the place everyone will start, and it's the headline, whether you like it or not. The rest of the team is very, very important, but the quarterback, that's the MVP, usually, if your team ends up winning. That's the position that you got to have in today's NFL. That's the straw that stirs the drink. And there's a lot to talk about with the prospect quarterbacks at the beginning of this draft. Obviously, Caleb Williams is that top dog, and there's even drama with what the Bears are going to do. It appears they're going to take him. It appears he's now fine with it. Rumors weeks and months ago that maybe he wouldn't want to go there. Likely means moving on from Justin Fields. But before we get into any of that, out of the quarterbacks at the top of the board, the Jalen Daniels, the Drake May, etc., J.J. McCarthy, who's been in a lot of conversations, certainly from the Combine, won a national title, but wasn't thought of as a top prospect until maybe more so recently. Who do you think, for you, is actually the most can't-miss, bust-proof QB that you're the most comfortable in? How do you think this is going to play out? And do you have any takes here that differ with any of the norm? I did hear a hot take from Ryan Leaf, who might be argued as the biggest bust in NFL history, former QB, obviously. He doesn't believe Caleb Williams is even ready right now. And if he did have Caleb Williams on his team, he would want him to sit for multiple years because of what he does in college will not translate to him. It's a hot take. what do you say about any of those guys?
Yeah, for me, I would say, I wouldn't say bust proof, but I feel most confident in Caleb Williams translating to the NFL level. And really, you know, I feel like we've gotten to a point where he's been in the limelight for a couple of years now. And when you have a quarterback prospect that's been around for a couple of years, has multiple years of tape, you played at Oklahoma, played at USC, you get picked apart, you know, and people start to really doubt that you're this next level guy, you know, top of the class. And obviously his off-script ability and ability to make, you know, crazy Mahomes-like plays, you know, seem to feel like they're not going to translate. But that skill set doesn't go away at the NFL level, you know. I think really it's about being more efficient in terms of what plays you can do that, what plays you can't, living to fight another day. Right. And really that just comes from playing hero ball. You know, USC gave up a lot of points this past season defensively. So you're going to track me every single game that you're playing. So, of course, you're going to go for the big play instead of taking what's there and take gambles. And I think it hurt him at times this year, but also you got to see what makes him so special as well. So I think when you combine all those things and what he can do in and out of the structure, the criticism he's had to deal with, even at the college level, stuff like that makes you built for the NFL level. We saw C.J. Stroud last year get picked apart by pretty much everyone. You know, obviously that cognitive test that came out not to be.
No one saw C.J. Stroud coming, 100%. No one
did. Yeah, so for me, it feels like Caleb Williams has that type of feel around him. Obviously, he did perform in the combine this year, but I feel like, you know, the Bears are going to be comfortable taking him. And for me, I feel most comfortable when I watch and turn on his tape. What he does in and out of the pocket, I think just is going to translate, and maybe it's going to result in some, you know, questionable decisions early on. But then you're going to get plays that, you know, just no really, you know, few other quarterbacks can make, and you need that in the current NFL. As for the rest of the quarterback class, I think it's really a toss up for me. You know, it, just like Drake May and Jaden Daniels will probably be in that next tier, but I feel like Caleb Williams is in a bit of a tier of his own, just for me personally. But I would say for Drake May and Jaden Daniels, it really depends on what you want in a quarterback. Jaden Daniels obviously brings such great rushing upside, the ability to make amazing plays. He's so fast, so twitchy. And then obviously he took a step as a passer as well, hitting the middle of the field, hitting the backside digs, and really spraying the ball all over the field, obviously with a talented receiving core. And he played with so much confidence, the ability to drive the ball vertically. But then when it comes to Drake May, I think you're probably getting a little bit of mix of both in somewhere in between Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, where a guy that is really creative, has underrated running ability. But in terms of like a pure passer in the drop back game, I think there's not many people that can hit the spots that he can accurately and does it so well. And the thing that's struggling, you know, is a struggle with his evaluation is, one, his receivers dropped so many passes that should be caught. And there's so many times where
he was without his best receiver at the beginning of last season as well, that whole NCAA thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And he still was able to keep North Carolina's offense afloat with arguably a worse offensive line than he had last year when he really burst on the scene. So to me, I think this is such an interesting quarterback class because all these guys are battle tested. You know, all of them have had ups and downs in their college career, which makes it feel so unique. And then you have JJ McCarthy, who really hasn't been tested. You know?
Not so much. Right. Yeah. He 30 run plays a game or in a row against Penn State, wins the national title in a Big Ten where it's not really slinging the ball across the yard. Yeah, it almost, that's why he scares me, I guess, a little bit before I let you go here. It almost feels like a little bit of the quarterbacks, the McElroy, even further back of Matt Leinart, and obviously he was much more of a passer, but those quarterbacks that are with stacked offensive lines that are would give you 40 seconds, that are brick walls out there, that are stacked teams with all pros across the board that just win, that never really even have to overcome adversity or rarely have to even come back in games, and McCarthy did lose a playoff game, but outside of that, they scare me for the NFL. And there's a long lineage of those guys not working out because they're going to be put on teams in the first round that are bad. They're going to clip off losses. The O-line will usually be bad. They won't have the playmakers there. And it's such a different world than what some of the guys you mentioned have dealt with, that it may take a year or two to even get used to it. And by that point, they might even get discouraged. I mean, that's what some of them have talked about that. Matt Leinart kind of talked about that, that it was a whole different world. It was a culture shock for him. And then once he started getting going, the coaches were already out on him. He didn't really feel it anymore. His motivation wasn't there. It was already deep in his career. And that's just it. That feels like that could be J.J. McCarthy to me, but I know a lot of experts are now high on him, certainly talking to them at the combine. It seemed like his stock actually really rose, whereas maybe Drake Maye's actually fell a little bit. Not that he had a bad weekend, but he wasn't discussed as much. And a lot of the conversation was J.J. McCarthy, people are underrating him. He potentially could be a top five, maybe a top three on this board. And I don't know for me.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, he really has to fall in the right situation. And that's why people, when you notice like the recent mock drafts, he's sending him to teams like Denver. You're sending him to teams like Minnesota that has established play callers and have, you know, weapons offensively. Not necessarily Denver to the degree that Minnesota has it, but Minnesota just, that's why there are specific teams that make sense for him. Yeah. Even then, you're not going to roll them out year one. And I think, you know, with Daniels, Maye, and Williams, you can run them out year one and have some success with them. McCarthy feels like more of like, you know, needs to sit and wait to really develop and really get a feel for the offense. But those other three guys, to me, feel like even when things break down, they can find a way to make plays. And I think that's such an important part of the game. But for me, as it stacks up right now, you know, I have McCarthy as my fifth quarterback. You know, behind Jaden Daniels. Oh, number one is Caleb, Drake Maye, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, and then J.J. McCarthy would be my top five.
Yeah, Michael Penix got to be mentioned too. I mean, he was throwing laser beams out there. I would say as a deep ball pure thrower, he's the guy, and there's some athleticism there as well. And it seems like his stock is just always rising and always fine. Although I did have some conversation with, I will say, an ex-offensive coordinator at the Big Ten level that I won't mention, whom not as high on Penix. So there are some that think there are holes there. We'll see. But obviously his stock seems to be fine right now. Devin Jackson of the Philadelphia Inquirer joining me here as we are talking NFL draft right now, quarterbacks on Mic Drop. Now to backtrack a little bit here and go back to the top of the board, it seems like everybody, again, including the Chicago Bears, have Caleb Williams as the number one. People like Ryan Leaf may drop hot takes, but he is that guy. You mentioned a little bit why maybe that perception maybe is a false narrative, because if you're down in games because your defense is so bad, you can't throw checkdowns, or else you're not giving your team a chance, even if you're putting solid film on for the NFL level. So he kind of was forced into the situation that some thought his value may have decreased this past season in comparison to his Heisman campaign. But if you were going to compare Caleb Williams right now to, say, Justin Fields, which is the conversation right now, this is a guy who's been in the league for a couple years. He had a solid end of the year, but he's been dealing with tons of different coaches and coordinators, and that's going to change. And you could argue he hasn't really been put in the best position to succeed, but it now appears like the Bears are going to part ways, not pick up the fifth year, go ahead and draft Caleb. Caleb will be there. The franchise of the Bears, despite being historic, has never had a legendary quarterback to be a perennial All-Pro, etc. So that Caleb is trying to buck that trend, and they don't want to pass on another, what seems like surefire first-round guy again with this staff who can carry on. But how would you compare, at least as a talent, Fields now with some NFL time under his belt versus Caleb Williams right now as a prospect? They are similar in age. This would be first round to first round. But if you're dumping Fields for Caleb, even though Caleb's obviously going to come cheaper on the rookie clock, you got to feel like you're getting the more talented guy with the higher ceiling, or eventually this is going to be a move that'll come back to bite you. So how would you compare the two of them?
Yeah, I think when Fields was coming out, and I kind of look more like, you know, prospect to prospect, how they look coming out. I feel like Fields was just the better runner of the two, I feel like, just in terms of the dynamic, the power, just how he was able to really make defenses hurt on third downs, especially. But in terms of throwing the ball, I just think there are two different worlds in terms of throwers. And it feels like Caleb Williams is just – different, you know, in terms of his arm elasticity, how he's able to change arm angles, his ability to really hit any part of the field on the run, falling backwards. I mean, he's thrown all types of passes, and they seem to get to those players, especially. With Fields, it feels like he's not as confident in terms of, like, throwing out of structure a little bit. It's like he looks more to run, you know, and it could be just – translating to NFL game, you kind of like revert back to what you feel like is your, you know, some of your best traits or some of the best things you can do under pressure. And it felt like in those times he was trying to look to run more so than, you know, keeping his eyes up and down the field. And over time that got a little bit better, but it just, there's no consistency there. And, you know, with some of the quarterbacks in kind of field skill set, when you look at Lamar Jackson, you look at Patrick Mahomes, what's really started to separate them is that when they're around chaos, they know where their outlets are and then how to, you know, draw that line between running themselves and just getting, you know, be a distributor. And I feel like Fields never got to that point where he became a full-time distributor. He was still trying to, you know, out-athlete sometimes. He was still trying to create big plays with his legs. And really go big play hunting in general. I think that's kind of the play of the young quarterback is, how do you manage running the plays as they are, moving the ball down the field and taking the 5-6 yard gains instead of taking the 30-40 yard gains. The same thing with Caleb Williams. And I felt like he did a better job as a college prospect this year, especially with teams taking away the big play. Balancing between just taking the dumped offs and taking the short plays and taking the surefire completions, because you have to chip away at defenses. And I feel like Caleb Williams started to learn that a little bit more this year. Obviously, there are still plays, especially when you're down 15, 20 points, where you got to have big plays and you got to kind of force it. So I think he's learning that balance a little bit at the college level, which I feel like Fields didn't do as good of a job of doing. So I feel like when you're looking at kind of their skill sets, you have a guy in Williams that's more of a distributor, a guy that, you know, he can run the ball, you know, he can use his athleticism and outside of the pocket, but consistently when you see his highlights, he's trying to get the ball down the field. It's not like he's a run first type mentality. And I think that's kind of the main difference between the two.
And the way that you describe Caleb Williams, and obviously this is an incredibly high bar, and I kind of do hate comps because it's unfair expectations, but you do describe Patrick Mahomes. You do describe an athletic quarterback that also can do the pocket passer thing if he has to, that'll take the check down, that can scramble to make a play, but certainly doesn't have to push it, can find a guy underneath, can dink and dunk you, but also can go over the top, can extend plays if he has to, won't make mistakes, won't try to do too much. I mean, that's Patrick Mahomes now. It kind of even was at the beginning of his career, really. Most quarterbacks take a while to get going. And you could argue with Fields to his defense, I'm sure some would say, certainly Bears fans that want to move on, or meaning move on and keep Fields and move on to this, to what they're doing now, that he could get better at all of that, because those were what you're saying about Fields now was a criticism of Lamar Jackson early in his career. And he's certainly become a two-time MVP. He's done a lot more with his arm. He bucks the trend at just being an athlete. Maybe Fields is still clinging to that. So you don't know where they could go, but money is involved here, and Fields is going to be way more expensive. So I think that's why this is an easy decision for you, though. And it sounds like the answer is yes to this question. But if money was not a thing and the NFL did not have these rules and say this was just pure on player to player, doesn't matter, and you had Fields a couple years in, Caleb is sitting there, you're at one, do you like the disparity enough as a prospect that you would still take Caleb and dump Fields for whatever trade you can, regardless of this fifth year thing?
Yeah, I think so. And I really, it's such a tough discussion to have, because obviously you put in resources, you traded up for Justin Fields as a Bears, and you put resources in it. But, you know, I kind of look at, you know, some of the other things that have happened, you know, over the last couple of years, even that same draft class. Obviously, the Jets, you look at them, they're looking to move on from Zach Wilson. 49ers moved on from Trey Lance after a couple of seasons. Yeah. So we're at a point in quarterback evaluation, quarterback patience, which is at an all-time low. Everyone wants to depend on the instant. It's at an instant. They want that instant starter, instant star. And you know, just based on the way the NFL is moving, it feels like they have to do this. Even though they have the fifth year option, they have the ability to bring him back for another year. It just feels like
gotta pay him confidence. More. That's part of the problem.
You got to pay him one, and then two, the confidence in him just isn't the same. The same regime is not in there that brought him in. I think it just feels like they want a fresh start and reset the quarterback clock. And you know they're going to try to facilitate a trade. I think that he wants to do, and it feels like they want to work with him to do so. But it feels like the time is now to you know move on from him and start the new regime with Caleb Williams.
And depending on where he goes and where he ends up, it honestly could be the best thing for him, too. Again, the history is not on the sides of the Bears developing somebody nor this staff. He might need to be in a different situation. And whether this is good or bad for Caleb in Chicago, it doesn't appear that the DC thing and the Cam Andrews trying to conspire to get him is going to work. That the Bears got to take him. They got to reset the clock, and it might even be the best thing for Justin Fields to move on and try somewhere new. Again, Devin Jackson here, Philadelphia Inquirer, as we're talking draft here on Mic Drop. As we move off the quarterbacks a little bit, as that's going to be a conversation that just never dies out, and a lot more intrigue this year than in past years, to be honest with you, because you have teams with a very quick leash and then so many quarterbacks that are potential prospects people really believe in. You have Caleb there at the top. You have the intrigue situation with the Bears and their drama. And as you mentioned, teams are not waiting around any longer. So anyone dropping a comment that this guy got to sit for 1 or 2 years, that's it. You only really get 1 or 2 years or maybe 1.5 or 2 at the most. That's the whole Kenny Pickett conversation in Pittsburgh where I'm sitting that people are kind of already out on him. You could argue it's only been 1.5 years, now only a game or so with the coordinator that's not Matt Canada. Do you keep on trying? Do you say you're out? He was the only first-round quarterback in that draft. So that's a whole conversation that maybe we'll get into here at the end of the show and I get your takes on it. But to move off the QBs here, still talking draft, Marvin Harrison Jr. is that other non-quarterback that some are saying is the best overall prospect in this draft who's not a quarterback. And receiver is a position that right away you can have a significant impact. You don't usually have to wait around no matter what system or wherever you are. Obviously, he has the last name that people are going to be aware of. Obviously, he was at a program that people are going to be watching and are well aware of. But it's a very polarizing conversation when it comes to Marvin Harrison Jr. because there are some that think, okay, this is the guy that's not a QB. And then there are others that bring up, if it wasn't for his last name and where he played college ball, he wouldn't be that kind of prospect. There are other talented receivers. The receiver class is incredibly deep, and it is. And Xavier Worthy, as I mentioned, became the fastest man ever at the Combine in Indy just a few days ago as we're speaking. So if he can catch the ball and he was at a big-time program, maybe you look in his direction instead of Marvin Harrison Jr. or to many other players. Where are you on the Marvin Harrison Jr. conversation? And what do you think is going to happen for him?
Yeah, for me, he's a top receiver in the class. And to me, he's one of the top prospects overall, regardless of positions. Okay. Obviously, quarterbacks dominate the talk. But for me, the really changed the, you know, I don't want to say change, but what really solidified it for me is I went to the Georgia-Ohio State college football playoff in his sophomore year, Georgia versus Ohio State. Yeah. He was the best player on the field. Now, you think about who was on the field. It was C.J. Stroud was on the field. Jalen Carter was on the field. Obviously, some Georgia prospects this year are on the field. I mean, so many talented players were on that field. I mean, you look at Ohio State's tackles, DeJuan Jones and Paris Johnson being the top 10 pick.
Yeah. Big word.
You know, obviously. Yeah. Think about all the players on the field, and Marvin Harrison was the best one as a sophomore. You know, and to me, he dominated that game, and when he left the game, it changed the momentum so massively. And to me, when you have a guy that's that valuable to a team as a sophomore, as a guy with a, a potential Heisman winning quarterback that went in the top, you know, went second overall to the Houston Texans. I mean, there are just so many layers to what he brings to the table. Right. But getting to see him in person and seeing how effortless he made everything look, from route running, from attacking the football in the air, from tracking the football, for how fast he is at, 6'3", like 210, 215, we really haven't seen many guys be able to move like he does. Obviously, the lineage plays into it. His name obviously plays into it, but that's something he can't control. And getting to interview him over the couple years that he's been in college and getting to talk to him one-on-one, I mean, the way he attacks everything is such like a pro. You know, he wants to work at his craft. The day after they lost in that college football semifinal to Georgia, he's working the jug machines. He's getting right back into his craft. So he's a guy that, to me, at the college level, is already a pro. And you got to factor in, obviously, as a new quarterback, the quarterback isn't probably an NFL level quarterback at all.
Might have been good for him,
Kyle McCord,
to show what he did without CJ Stroud, honestly.
And it showed that he's still, you know, despite all that, you know, despite the underthrown passes, you know, maybe he didn't get as many targets as he should have gotten. He still played really well this season. And to me, that I think that speaks volumes. But look, I think, you know, again, this is another aspect of a guy that's being propped up or has been propped over the last couple of years. But, you know, NFL teams were ready for him in 2022. They were ready for him to declare then, you know. Yeah. So they were ready for him to come to the NFL level. They were saying he would have been wide receiver one in last year's class. So I think at this point, you know, he's going to be a really good pro. And he already approached the college game like the pro game, working on his craft every single day, staying after practice to work. I mean, every little detail he makes sure is covered, and that's what you need to be at the receiver level to be one of the best. And I think he's going to enter the league and catapult himself into that top 10, top 15 discussion as a rookie.
Yeah, and when you have a last name like he does, when you have a name that is, you know, descendant of a Hall of Famer, you are going to have people say you're overrated because you're getting talked about more because of that last name. And to be fair to that conversation, you probably are getting talked about more because of that last name. There might be people that could not offer the analysis that you just offered that are just casuals or barely watch that are going to know this player because of his last name. So if there's any tie-breaking scenario, it might go in that direction. But also, it could be a negative that some are thinking, okay, you're not really that good because of this. You're only getting the love because of the last name. And I guess the argument in his favor would be that, yeah, there are many great athletes or many athletes that have tried to come out and have pro careers in many sports that were sons, brothers, etc., related to Hall of Famers, and it didn't work out. There also are some where it did, and he approached the college game like a pro probably because of Marvin Harrison and who Marvin Harrison put around him. And being Marvin Harrison Jr., you're getting a Hall of Famer, his whole team, any of his colleagues, any of his friends. And this is also not just Marvin Harrison and Marvin Harrison Jr. here. This is the two at the same position. So it's a direct tutelage that could be placed down from Marvin Harrison to Marvin Harrison Jr. So those things do kind of line up as a positive for him, or at least taking a chance on him, certainly when the playmaking is there. But I got to ask, outside of just maybe people figuring he's getting too much love because of the last name, which is the easy reason that some could give why they think he's overrated, are there any holes in his game that could legitimately have people have pause that call him overrated? And then if not Marvin Harrison Jr., who would be among the other receivers in this draft that if someone's telling you, say you're a GM with a team, the owner's like, I don't want Marvin Harrison Jr., I hate Marvin Harrison, I think he's overrated, I don't want to go down that road, then what would you do? Like, what will be another option at receiver, and why could Marvin Harrison be overrated for you outside of just the last name?
Yeah, so I'll start with your first question in terms of, like, are there any holes in this game or things that he could work on? I do think his drops was a little bit of an uptick this year in terms of, like, drops that probably shouldn't happen or normally wouldn't happen. But I don't see that as a huge concern in the game. I just think catching the ball, I mean, it's the most important thing you can do as a receiver. So I would say that. And then I don't think when you start to compare some of the other receivers, he's not a, you know, dynamic, like, run after the catch guy that maybe a Malik Nabers is, you know, or, you know, a guy like that. To me, so I think, you know, obviously Xavier Worthy as well, but when you look at his size, I mean, he's a guy that's a bigger receiver, so obviously he's not going to be as, you know, dynamic in terms of, like, creating huge chunk plays. I think he's more of a, he's somewhere in between, like, you know, he's a legitimate deep threat and can go up and make contested catches, but along would be more of a possession type of receiver. So to me, I feel like he's a guy that probably gets a little bit more volume. He's probably not going to blow you away with like an 80-yard touchdown. He just turns up the sideline and takes it to the house. But I do think, you know, he's strong receiver, can handle press coverage. And really, when you ask him to do the things before the catch, yeah. I think he's the best at it in this class, like doing anything before the catch, okay. Whether it's setting up routes and being able to break the cushion of defensive backs. But when you look at like after the catch, that's where I think a guy like Malik Nabers has entered the conversation, why teams might value his skill set a little bit more than Marvin Harrison, just because what you can do when getting the ball in Nabers in space, how explosive he is, and how he can break tackles in the open field. So I feel like that will be kind of the guy that people maybe split on, like in terms of like, okay, is Marvin Harrison wide receiver one, is Nabers. And really, I think it just comes down to preference and what you want in a receiver, what you're looking for in a receiver. And I think that's what maybe pushing some of the, maybe Marvin Harrison is overrated, is because some people value what players do after the catch. They do value, yeah, you know, what, yeah, they're able to do explosively and whatnot. And that's why some team is going to go out and take Xavier Worthy first round, because how explosive, how fast he is. And they've seen what Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill have done in Miami and that tandem, and yeah, how explosive that type of receiver build is. But that's why I would think like where the line is drawn between like Harrison and some of the other receivers. But in terms of anything before the catch and getting ready to catch the ball, I don't think any receiver matches what Marvin Harrison could do.
Yeah, I'm sure they saw the time, the 40 time of Xavier Worthy and think Tyreek Hill or something like that. I mean, obviously you got to be able to catch the ball. This isn't just a track meet. Ask the Raiders all those years. They just drafted track stars. That's not enough. But if you can catch the ball, yeah, making plays afterwards is a big deal. So maybe that's a ding in Marvin Harrison. We'll see. I'm sure the name's going to help him. I'm also sure he's going to get a shot. I'm sure these guys are all going to really be first-rounders. Devin Jackson here, the Philadelphia Inquirer, as we're talking draft here on Mic Drop. So moving off the offensive side of the ball a little bit here, and we will get into maybe some defensive players as well in this conversation. Who are some players out there, offense or defense, in this draft that are not getting talked about enough, that I haven't brought up, that on most of these shows you appear on that people are not discussing, that maybe you would call a sleeper? This could be even a late round pick that you've covered a lot, you were at the combine, that you think this player or these players could really have an impact, could be that diamond in the rough of this draft. We've seen that in recent years, late round picks, and obviously the historic example is Brock Purdy as Mr. Relevant at QB doing it and going to a Super Bowl. That's not something that had ever happened before and likely won't happen again, at least not as Mr. Relevant. Obviously Brady was a late round pick, but even aside from the QB position, obviously, are there any sleeper picks that you think they deserve more love, they're going to have an impact, they're going to be good, you're confident in it, it's not a hot take for you?
Yeah, so there's a couple guys that stand out to me. I'll start with the defensive side of the ball, and I'll go defensive end Marshawn Nealand from Western Michigan. And okay, to me, I really like his size and his athleticism, his ability to be a disruptor in the run game specifically. And obviously playing at a MAC school, people question a little bit like the competition level and yeah, how well does he play in those types of environments. But when he played Iowa, he was so disruptive against normally a historically good offensive line crop that Iowa produces every year. He was very disruptive in both in the running ability and pass rush ability. And then when he went down to the Senior Bowl, he had a lot of good reps against some really, really good tackles. Just how explosive his lower body is, how powerful his hands are. I mean, getting to talk to him at the combine podium, he's a guy that understands that people are going to question the competition level and what he can do against a bigger, stronger, faster, quicker, twitchier offensive lineman. But to me, I feel like the sky is the limit for what he can bring to the table. He's still, just scratching the surface as a pass rusher. But to me, I feel like he's going to be a really good run defender early on in his career and really be able to push the pocket with his strong hands and power. So he's a guy to me that will translate both in both of those aspects. And as he continues to develop, okay, I feel pretty good about him you know, churning out a really good and long career as a guy that can start as your defensive end in about a year or two once he really adjusts to the NFL game. So he's one guy for me. I'll go to safety and Dadrian Taylor-Demerson from Texas Tech. To me, he's a guy that really has not been talked about much in a safety class that doesn't really have a true top guy. You know, a lot of people are like, is it Cameron Kitchens from Miami? You know, is it Jaden Hicks from Washington State? You know, is it Tyler Newbin from Minnesota? But to me, I think you really get value in the third and fourth round, especially for safeties. And that's where you can find a lot of starters, a lot of guys that, you know, may not have the, you know, high end, you know, speed, athleticism, but safety is a position that you got to be instinctual. You have to be really smart on the back end. And you have to know when to take chances. And Demerson, to me, he really displays all those things. He didn't blow up the combine with his speed and athleticism, but he's a guy that has played all over the place, you know, from one high safety to in the box to as a two high guy, as a nickel. So to me, I think he's going to find a role in an NFL squad, whether it's at nickel, whether it's at safety, you know, whether it's as a dime linebacker. I think you really have a wide range of things that you can do with him and for his skill set to translate. So he's another guy for me defensively that just makes a lot of sense in terms of what he brings to the table and just how good he is, you know, tackling in open space and covering down the field. So that would be the two defensive guys for me. And then I'll just go one offensive guy here. And I'll go Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I know he's a power five guy that, you know, is a slot receiver, outside receiver, played a little bit of both at Florida. But to me, what he does as a run blocker, I think, is going to be the big reason that teams are high on him. When you think about what the McShay offensive system, what the Shanahans like to do, they want guys that will, you know, crack down on linebackers.
Especially like mid, late round picks. Yeah.
That will be able to do the dirty work and still be able to catch the ball in the middle of the field, be reliable, get open down the field. I don't think he's going to be some all-pro type of receiver, but I feel pretty confident in that he's going to find a long career and find his ability to crack the starting lineup as a rookie just because his willingness to block, his ability to get open, understanding how to find soft coverages, and be able to sit in holes in zone coverage specifically. There's so much good that you like in this game. He did so well at the Senior Bowl, one of the best receivers coming out of the Senior Bowl. And then he tested off the charts at the Combine too. I think he had like a 42-inch vertical, and he ran the fastest three-cone at 6.62. So he's a guy to me that his game is going to translate. You know, I feel pretty confident that him and Ladd McConkey are two guys that in a receiver class where there's a lot of, like, you know, high upside guys that may have a low floor, both of them have really high floors that can be dependable receivers, whether it's wide receiver twos or threes in the NFL and find a long career.
Yeah, and generally speaking, safety and receiver are two positions that if you don't have an opportunity because the pick's not there for you, you don't want to give up a lot for a trade, and you miss the high-end guys, you can usually get quality production in the middle to late rounds. Like, there usually is depth there. There's been in recent years. So those two are definitely interesting names to pull out there, and it also may depend on what you're looking for. And if you can block, you're going to have a spot usually at least on special teams to open up your career and get in the roster. That'll help you make a roster for sure here. Devin Jackson of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mike Oste here. It's Mike Drop.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
Made possible by Believe and available everywhere you get your podcasts. I now want to move somewhere that I'm very familiar with. I cover him professionally. It's Zach Frazier. We had to wait 2 hours to speak to him at the NFL Combine. I went through a scrum of about 20-plus to me and a couple colleagues, pretty much, that stayed for that two-hour trek. And he did tell us a lot of that was conversations about his health, his last play in college, 10-second runoff, avoided losing time off the clock, allowed Garrett Greene and company to win a game that they almost were blowing It got him into a solid season. They lose that game. A lot's different for the West Virginia program, likely. That was a heads-up play. Zach Frazier's mentioned every team he's talked to, formally or otherwise, has said that that was a major deal for them. They loved watching that. Shows he's a smart player. You hear about his intelligence, athleticism. Obviously a stand-up kid. Very, very mature. I think he's going to have a great career. What are your thoughts on Zach Frazier? And where do you think his stock currently is? Because I also will tell you, he's been a guy that even from last year at the Combine when I was there, everyone was asking me, well, where is Frazier? He should be here now, you know, jokingly asking because he decided to come back. He's been a prospect for a while. He would have been drafted last year, likely. It appears his stock, even while not 100% healthy, he didn't do the 40 yet, but he plans to be fully healthy by the Big 12 Pro Day not far from now, that his stock just keeps on rising. Now, center, even the best of them usually are looking at late first round. He's usually two or three on most people's boards, which means he's likely at best in the second round. Seems like he's at least second round at the worst. And a team like, say, the Steelers that I cover in Pittsburgh, the whole thought process of the past that they could just sit at 51, get Frazier, do something else in the first round, and then get a really solid future All-Pro as their second pick, it almost feels like his stock is rising so much that if they want to do that, they would have to trade up for him or some other team's going to pick him before they pick in that second round. Where are you on Frazier, and where do you think his stock currently is as far as the draft?
Yeah, I go back and forth with him and Jackson Powers Johnson. I feel like those are the two clear top centers in this class. But to me, I think his stock probably lies between like around 30 to like 40, 45. Okay. So I feel like if the Steelers want to go and get him, they need to go up and get him.
100%, you know,
he doesn't feel like he's going to last there to 51. And from what it sounds like, his medicals are checking out, you know, even though teams are asking about it. His ability to even make it back to do on-field drills, I think, at the Combine is pretty impressive. I know at the Senior Bowl, he was trying to get back on the field to compete in that. So to me, I think those are like big check marks, a guy that wants to compete, a guy that wants to be out there and show what he can do. And honestly, if it wasn't for the injury, we might be talking about him late first round, you know, as a guy that is he the top center in this class? You know, is he a guy that should come off the board first? And I feel like teams do have him as a top center. He fits a lot of what you want to do, whether it's gap scheme, whether it's zone scheme. His athleticism is paramount. But I feel like what I've heard most, especially, you know, in the draft process this year and just in general, they love dudes that wrestle, you know, that have a wrestling background. And he excelled
at wrestling as well. Didn't just wrestle. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that's been the big talking point, especially among offensive line. You want guys that know how to get low with their leverage, can work to reset their hands. And really, you know, and I talked to like, and this is like a side thing, but I talked to Peyton Wilson and it was the same thing. He wrestled in high school too. And he was another guy that, you know, talked about how wrestling is so important in the game of football and what they do. But Frazier, to me, he's so awesome in terms of his football intellect. You watch him on film, he's covering up multiple guys' mistakes. Like he's blocking two dudes at once. He's blocking multiple people on the same play. I remember watching him before the 2022 season, and he probably would have been a
sophomore. I was going to say, especially back then. Yeah.
But he was throwing around Siaki Ika, and that guy is like 360, 370 pounds, and he's just tossing him to the ground. So the lower body strength, the ability to root out defenders, I mean, everything you want in a center prospect. And you think about where the centers have gone lately, you know, like Tyler Linderbaum went in the first round for the Ravens. I think about John Michael Smith's last year, who a lot of people liked. I want to say he went 37 or 38 to the Giants. So it feels like that late first, like early to mid second round is where his stock lies and where a team can select him and have a guy that is there for to be a decade long starter.
Yeah, he's very mature as well, very intelligent, very athletic. These are traits that you definitely would want in your center. That's a position that you're looking to draft a guy to be there for the next 5, 10 decade long. This isn't like a 1 or 2 year experiment, like a quarterback. You try it for a couple years and you try again. Nah, you want the center to be the guy that's there for a long time and even help the quarterback be able to learn protections really quick. Maybe he's dealing with an inexperienced QB, a quarterback that needs to prove a lot still that's young. Like if say the Steelers would take him and he joins Kenny Pickett and would do the backyard brawl thing. Or if he is, say, with the Bears, who talked to him a lot, and they do move on from Fields, or even if he's there and it's him and Caleb Williams, you need him to be able to do something with a young quarterback as well and learn those protections. So I think his intelligence is a big deal. Now, no one's perfect, and I try to ask everybody this who comes on to talk Frazier, because everyone just waxes poetic about Frazier, just personally as a player. There's no one really who doesn't like him, and you could even add what I asked him at the combine, and I do think is a feather in his cap, but you mentioned what he did a couple years ago and watching him on film. I don't even know if everyone's fully aware of this, but he dealt with such a unique quarterback smorgasbord in college, I'll say, that I think is a major benefit for him. He dealt with Jared Diggie, JT Daniels, and Garrett Green, and that's just the last couple years. Three different type of quarterbacks, way different type of quarterbacks. And you're going from pocket passers to guys who can't move out of the pocket to air raid style to Garrett Green that's kind of drawn it up in his backyard and can scramble and sometimes, you know, audible when no one's ready for him. And that, I think, is a major coup for Zach Frazier. You can plug him anywhere, and he's dealt with that QB and that style before. But my question to you then would be, what could be something about Frazier that would hold him back? Like, what is a negative for Zach Frazier that would give you pause, that would make you have him as your number two? Some even I've seen have him as the number three center, which then I would feel like is lower than the majority. But no one's perfect. What could be a criticism of Frazier or could hold him up from being a future All-Pro?
Yeah, I think the center evaluation has changed so much, especially with Jason Kelce. Obviously, he just retired. But
right.
Everyone wants a guy that can – like pull out in front of your running back and have that type of athleticism where, you know, you can put him basically all over the field, like be your lead blocker, be a guy that leads out on screens and things like that. And to me, it feels like while Frazier, he has the athleticism, he has that ability to do those things. I don't think that's necessarily a strength of his. He's a guy that to me is going to get the job done, you know, in any means necessary. And it may not be the most flashiest. And really, to me, I think he's more of a blue collar type of prospect that he just goes out and does his job or he does the best that he can. And to me, I think, you know, maybe his arms are a little bit smaller than, you know, some of the elite centers. And obviously, you know, arm length is one of the biggest things to me that, you know, can sometimes be overblown in prospects. But, you know, things like that, like, you know, him being able to reset his hands and get underneath players, I think makes such a huge difference. But you're not going to be able to do that to everyone. So I think it's being able to translate some of that wrestling background into, you know, what he can do at the NFL level. And things happen so quickly at the NFL level, a little bit quicker. So I think, you know, adjusting to the NFL game, I think it's going to take him a little bit. I don't think he's like some athletic specimen that you typically see, you know, like a first round center go, you know, like obviously like a Linderbaum, and then, you know, Jax Powers Johnson is getting some love there as well. Right. So I think that might be the only thing that people may see is like, he's not, you know, what's the, you know, quote unquote sexy pick or the guy that has all those highlights that maybe some of his other people do, you know, they at the same position. And I think that, you know, that kind of discussion kind of drives those things. You know, does he have like, you know, amazing play? To me, you really have to enjoy offensive line play to watch and respect what he does. And
it's hard to evaluate. You don't have stats. You don't have – it's harder to watch that film unless you maybe played the position before or watched that film for a while. 100%.
Yeah. So it's not
– other linemen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the narrative around him is like it's not the flashiest film that you're going to see there. But to me, like if you get the job done, that's really all that matters. You know, you don't have to drive a guy through the ground every single play, and you don't have to like completely, you know, block him fully. As long as you get a piece of him and create that seam, that's really all that matters. So I think that's what the discussion around him is. It's like, all right, but JPJ does this and say, you know, he pulls out in front of, you know, the running back, and he, you know, cleans a safety 20, 25 yards down the field. You know, maybe Graham Barton is getting some love too, as a guy that played left tackle, play center early in his career. And the same thing, like he has more of those like wow plays, like, you know, can play all over the line. But to me, I think when it comes to just center position, especially, you got to be able to have that down and down consistency and have that strong lower half and strong anchor. And I feel like he checks all the boxes, which, you know, I think a team is going to be really happy getting him, you know, regardless of, you know, if you had JPJ or Graham Barton ahead of him. I think Frazier has a chance to be all pro sooner than those other guys.
Yeah, I don't think there's any team that selects Zach Frazier that's going to sit there and say, I'm disappointed or I'm upset with this pick. He's going to definitely show up, be mature, and put his head down and do some work and act like a pro. He's kind of been a pro already. And I do think he's kind of bust-proof. Whether he ends up in Canton someday is a whole other conversation. I will tell you, Nick brought up the arm length as well. That's seemingly what I do normally get if you're going to have a negative of Zach Frazier. And anyone can also watch film, and it's probably hard to evaluate these centers because anybody can look at the tape and say, well, all of these guys aren't bungling snaps. All of these guys get into the QB. All of these guys, you know, block and win their one-on-ones. What makes one better than the other outside of the 10? But again, maybe he does have that solid tiebreaker of the intelligence of that 10-second runoff. That last play could get him a pick or two bump from where he otherwise would have been. So coming back seems like it's a positive for Zach Frazier for one more year as a Mountaineer, help that program get back to where it wants to be. And then it doesn't appear the injury is going to derail him. And if he can maybe run a 40, we'll see, at the Big 12 Pro Day, he certainly should be ready for camps, etc. Now, moving around the docket here of what we cover locally, especially throughout the Sports Now family networks that I'm a part of, I do want to ask you about Chop Robinson. So he's somebody obviously from Penn State. He was in a lot of conversation at the Combine. Has a cool nickname, really, really talented, made a lot of big plays in college. What are your thoughts on Chop Robinson and him as a prospect?
Yeah, he has one of the quickest first steps that I've seen doing evaluation. You know, just how he gets off the football, how fast he gets off the football, how explosive he is. It can't be overstated. I mean, it just it's hard to stop his speed rush. And right. Really, I think that's where kind of the conversation starts and ends. I think he's a guy to me that is a bit of a project right now in terms of rounding out his game. I do think he got marginally better as a run defender, but he's still not much of a factor there, you know, or wasn't much of a factor there at Penn State. It just felt like once he got washed down out of a play, he was kind of out of it. And when he's not really able to use that speed to his advantage, he's not as an effective pass rusher. He's still effective, but he's not a guy yet that has that second or third move just yet as a pass rusher. And I think that's what makes his evaluation difficult, is because a team is going to see that and say, well, that's all I need. I only need a guy that on third downs I can unleash him in the speed package I have, or send him on stunts, you know, or moving around. But how high do you take a guy like that if you see him as more of a pass rush specialist? So for me, I think he's a guy to me that he can wreck a game plan. He can absolutely devastate a team with his speed and his rushing ability on the outside corner. He does have an inside move as well that could be used to kind of build off of. But right now, there's only a few moves right now in his arsenal. And I think really to take that next step, you know, obviously got to have 3, 4, 5 moves. Right. When you compare him to this draft class, I just think he has the one elite trait that most don't. But is that one elite trait enough to take him over other guys that may have not, you know, one dominant trait, but have 2 to 3 really good or high level traits instead? And I think that's where the conversation kind of gets muddy with him. To me, I think when it's all said and done, he probably ends up as a second rounder, but I wouldn't blame a team for taking him in the first round. If you plan on, you know, having him as kind of a sub package guy early in his career, and let him continue to round out his game and figure it out as a run defender. I think that's going to be his biggest jump.
And it could be
hard to figure that out.
Obviously, he wants as much money as he can and be as high of a pick as he can get. But if you go in the second round, he might be put in a better situation, better system. Even if it is early second round and maybe those teams are still struggling teams right now, he might be picked by a team. You'd imagine somebody who is taking him would feel like he would fit right in for them, and that could maybe send him on an all-pro career quicker than if he was just best available, teams forced to take him because everyone else is off the board, and then you go ahead and plug him in there. On the other side of the ball for Penn State, we're not going to talk about all 10 prospects that were there in Indianapolis, literally, but Theo Johnson, tight end, he was the other one with another big combine workout. Chubb Robinson obviously had one defensively, but Theo was right up there, top one or two, pretty much everything across the board in terms of the workout, the 40, the split, the 20-yard shuttle. You're looking at vert jump, broad jump, three cone drill. He was up there, top one, two, or three for tight ends all across the board. What are your thoughts on him? He did come out of a system that, while Pat Freiermuth played tight end there at Penn State, usually, at least as pass catchers, it's not really a program that generates guaranteed NFL success. You had players like, say, Mitchell Tinsley last year, a big guy numbers at Western Kentucky, goes to Penn State, obviously a bigger deal, but couldn't put hardly any numbers up. Not really a pass-first offense, even though it can get explosive at times. Again, Freiermuth had success at Penn State and then in the NFL, but where is Theo Johnson for you? What did his combine do for you? For him, because it seemed like that really picked up the pace on conversation around him that maybe wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of Theo Johnson, even going back to during the season. And to me, you always saw little blips of what he could be just in the small sample size you get in him getting the ball at Penn State this past year. Obviously, I mean, he had career highs and everything, but it's still right. Not comparable to what top prospects Tim have at tight end. Yeah.
Right.
So for me, the combine really didn't do much because I saw a lot of what he did in athleticism wise and what he can do as a route runner, especially on his tape, but he just didn't get the ball. You know, I think that's the big thing is like he's open downfield. He's open over the middle of the field.
Yeah. And like, you wouldn't advise him to go there. Like, why are tight ends keep going there?
Nothing. Right. But I will say the one thing that probably did is going to help him most in his transition is in the blocking department. I think he really took a step forward as a blocker, especially him and Tyler Warren really did a nice job in tandem together. And I think that's what the silver lining in all this is that we know what he's a former receiver. So he knows how to get open, knows how to run these routes, et cetera. But the blocking aspect and at his size at like 257, 260, mm-hmm. to be able to do these things, I think just speaks volumes. I got to speak with him at the Senior Bowl for about 10, 15 minutes, just one-on-one. And he's such an impressive person and player and how he articulates
his story is incredible. Speaking. Yeah. His story is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to him a little bit about his story. Obviously he's from Canada and, you know, went to prep school in Canada and really didn't play in the United States until he got to college. So, really impressive player. I love what he brings to the table, as a modern tight end, a guy that can run routes from the slot, run routes from inline, you know, and really be a big red zone threat. Especially at the NFL level. But to me, the combine just really solidified what you see on this film is a guy that's extremely athletic and extremely underutilized. And obviously we've seen, you know, obviously like the George Kittles of the world and Iowa tight ends kind of go through something similar, you know, where you don't necessarily have the college stats to show maybe you're going to be a dynamic player, but you can go on and have a really good career. And I think Theo Johnson is, you know, when I look at him and Brendan Strange, you know, who went in the second round last year, I feel like Theo Johnson is the better player, you know, between the two. And I like Brendan Strange, but I feel like Theo Johnson is like that rare athlete you get at the position that can do so many things well, you know, especially in line as a blocker, that I feel like that combine, you know, performance really show what Penn State does in general in terms of creating these freak athletes, but also just his ability to be an athlete on the NFL field and teams are going to love what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I think Theo Johnson also impressed a little bit more combine to combine this year versus last year as a pure athlete, which is big if you're comparing him with Brenton Strange, not that Strange is not. And yeah, you're not going to put up the gaudy numbers, but if you really look at the film, there's a great player that's hidden in there. Certainly that story is maybe why I didn't know about Penn State not being a tight end factor, or at least a pass catcher factory. Yeah, Freiermuth was there. So it looks like he definitely has a spot somewhere for sure. And if he can block, that's going to be key. Because unless you're Gronk, you're going to be able to, you're going to need to block. You can't just come out there and say, I'm pretty much just a pass catcher at the tight end. So having the ability already, not having to learn it, like say Freiermuth did, he had to kind of do more blocking once he got to the league. It's something that he's already ready to get done in Theo Johnson there. So Devin Jackson from the Philadelphia Inquirer, I appreciate you joining me, man, for sure. I'm going to get you out of here in a second, but just if you, number one, if you have any hot take that you want to drop about the draft, you're welcome to do so before we let you go here. And then are there any teams, because there's always an NFL team every year that no matter what anybody says they should do or what makes sense, or even talking player versus player prospect wise, this team just throws a monkey wrench in and gets really wild. If you remember years ago, Vikings draft Christian Ponder, people were talking about third round QB and they're saying, nah, this is our guy. We're going to totally screw up the whole quarterback board. Or basically what the Raiders have done over the years, a bunch of times, even rumors, the Raiders are in on Fields, that they might be the dark horse team behind the Falcons, or if you believe the Steelers rumors, which I don't, that maybe the Raiders would make that move. And if they trade for Fields, that would really change a lot of things up that people weren't expecting. And who knows? And Cousins could be end up with the Falcons or back to Minnesota. That could change a lot of things too. Is there a team for you that people got to watch that this team could really move and just totally disturb the whole national narrative and upset the apple cart, and any other phrases you want to throw out there that would surprise people, that could really have other teams sitting back saying, damn, I wasn't expecting that. That ruins my whole plan.
Yeah, I look at the teams in the teens specifically, and I would say that, you know, the Saints are a team to watch for me. Okay. As a trade-up candidate. Maybe they don't go quarterback, but I feel like they are in a position where they're kind of like stuck in no man's land, where they don't really have a franchise quarterback, yeah. But they don't really have the assets to go and get one via trade once again, or don't really have the money to shell it out like that. But they have
why they're not in rumors, probably. Yeah.
Right. So they have a lot of questionable like decisions to make here. Whether it's like, all right, you know, Ryan Ramczyk, for example, is he going to come back and be a starting right tackle for them? Maybe they go up and get a tackle earlier than you expect. Maybe they want to get in that Olu Fashanu or Joe Alt sweepstakes. Will they want to go DB and they go and get up Terrion Arnold? So it feels like a team like that where, like, you're kind of stuck in the middle of the road. You don't really have, you know, the guy, but you have to pay, you know, like a Derek Carr, you know, exorbitant amount of money to be your quarterback, but you really don't believe in him. I would not be surprised if they made a big swing. They tried to make a big swing back in 2017 and got leapfrogged by the Chiefs to get Patrick Mahomes. So I'm not saying this is a similar situation, but it feels like they're a team that they have to do something. And they don't, yeah, they don't really don't have a tackle of the future per se. They took Trevor Penning a couple of years ago, and he really hasn't turned out to amount anything. Marshawn Lattimore could be on the trading block for them as a guy they don't want to pay again. You know, running back could be another area of need for them if Alvin Kamara doesn't make sense for them going forward. So they have a lot of question marks. Michael Thomas, same thing. You know, a guy that could be cut or traded. So they have a lot of question marks. So I could see them trading up into like that 6, 7, 8 area, and maybe a team like Minnesota were planning on doing that to get like a JJ McCarthy, you know, or they want to trade up to get a quarterback, and boom, the Saints do that, and maybe they do swing and take McCarthy, you know. So I feel like they're a team to watch out for as a potential trade up, and I wouldn't rule out the Giants trying to trade up in the top three either. You know, I feel like we haven't talked much about the Giants wanting a quarterback, and maybe
there's rumors about Saquon and the future of him there, right? There's a lot of rumors about his future, yeah.
But you're going to tell me they're going to run it back with Daniel Jones and expect to stay status quo? So to me, they're another team to watch that's maybe not in the teens, but you know, at 6 right now. But they have the Chargers at 5. They could easily trade up with. And really, depending on what happens with the Patriots, if they don't have the quarterback there, they may be looked to sell too. So I wouldn't rule out the Giants as a team that, especially if they want to get a quarterback of the future and want somebody there to basically transition from Daniel Jones because it's not working, I wouldn't rule them out too.
Yeah, I mean, unless you believe what they're trying to sell, which is hard to believe that they are continuing with Daniel Jones, or even Saquon saying he still believes in Daniel Jones. That's the message coming out of there. But that could be the message, kind of like you're alluding to, that everyone's saying that and then they just surprise and don't do it, because that's not really what they're doing. They did pay him though recently, which was the whole thing there. So they could be interesting. When you bring up the Saints, they really are interesting from the mindset of, you kind of know the Panthers' plan, even though they're years away and they got an ownership that's firing coach 7 games into a season. So that's a catastrophe, really. You got the Buccaneers who make the playoffs, bringing Baker Mac, bringing Mike Evans back. All that makes tons of sense for them. They should be the division favorite again. But outside of those conversations, you look at Atlanta. If they don't get Cousins, they're probably years away as well. The door is open there in that division. That if the Falcons don't get Cousins, they don't get Fields, and they just got how they are, basically you're looking at the Bucs locking it up already with a 9-win season to win the division. So if you maybe think you can do something to speed that clock up for yourself, and the door is open. So maybe they would finally do something. Devin, I appreciate the time. It'll all be very, very interesting. We'll be looking out for it, and maybe I'll be talking to you again here when the dust has settled and all of these moves have been made one way or the other.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, Mike. And, great talking with you. And as always, just let me know if you want to have me back on. I'd be happy to accommodate.
Absolutely, man. All right, Devin Jackson from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'll definitely be talking to you and hitting you up, man. Have a good day.
You too.
Devin Jackson from the Philadelphia Inquirer there. Did meet him at the Combine. I heard he was a fantastic draft analyst to have him on Talks and Draft here on Mic Drop. That was exactly what Nick said. You got to have Devin on Mic Drop. After Nick's been on recently and knows all about the show and where this show is going. So wanted to do it, wanted to oblige, and I was happy I did, because that was a great conversation with Devin Jackson here, talking quarterback, talking Marvin Harrison Jr., talking Zach Frazier, the Penn State prospects, Chubb Robinson, Theo Johnson, some teams that could surprise, some players that could be sleepers, some drama involved with the NFL draft. We talked about it all. Make sure to find this and every episode of Mic Drop here, made possible by the Believe Network. So you can find it on the Believe Network platforms, as well as everywhere you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, etc. Available video, available audio, available everywhere in your ears. And more draft conversation, more draft drama is still yet to come. So maybe more conversations and shows like this before the draft actually gets underway. When we keep on knowing more and more, we're still before pro days. There's still time, folks. But certainly after the draft, we'll have to have Devin back on to kind of go over his takes here and see where he ended up being in terms of accuracy of what actually happened in the draft. Maybe he'll come back on, we'll get a different Devin, and he'll be angry and say everyone just missed, because those are always the most fun. But again, thanks to Devin Jackson of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Again, this has been another episode of Mic Drop here on the Believe Network. I'm Mike Osti, and you can find me at MikeOsti11 all through social media.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.